Chapter 13. Tuesday, May 17th. Figueroa woke at 6:10 on Tuesday morning, took a long run along Nor Melestrand, showered and clocked in at police headquarters at 8:10. She prepared a memorandum on the conclusions she had reached the day before. At 9, Edclinth arrived. She gave him 20 minutes to deal with his mail, then knocked on his door. She waited while he read her 4 pages. At last he looked up.
"The Chief of Secretariat," he said.
"He must have approved loaning out Mortensen. So he must know that Mortensen is not at counter-espionage, even though, according to personal protection, that's where he is." Edclinth took off his glasses and polished them thoroughly with a paper napkin. He had met Chief of Secretariat Albert Schenker at meetings and internal conferences on countless occasions, but he couldn't claim to know the man well. Schenker was rather short, with thin reddish-blonde hair and a waistline that had expanded over the years. He was about 55 and had worked at SIS for at least 25 years, possibly longer. He had been Chief of Secretariat for a decade, and was Assistant Chief before that. Edclinth thought of him as a taciturn man who could act ruthlessly when necessary. He had no idea what he did in his free time, but he had a memory of having once seen him in the garage of the police building in casual clothes, with a golf bag slung over his shoulder. He had also run into him once at the opera.
"There was one thing that struck me," Figueroa said.
"What's that?"
"Evert Gulberg. He did his military service in the 40s and became a tax attorney, and then in the 50s he vanished into thin air."
"And?"
"When we were discussing this yesterday, we talked about him as if he were some sort of hired killer."
"It sounds far-fetched, I know, but
it struck me that there is so little background on him it seems almost like a smokescreen. Both IB and SIS established cover companies outside the building in the 50s and 60s.
"I was wondering when you think of that," Edclinth said.
"I'd like permission to go through the personnel files from the 50s, Figueroa said.
"No,"
Edclinth said, shaking his head.
"We can't go into the archives without authorization from the Chief of Secretariat, and we don't want to attract attention until we have more to go on."
"So what next?"
"Mortensen,"
Edclinth said.
"Find out what he's working on."
Salander was studying the vent window in her room when she heard the key turn in the door. In came Jonasson. It was past 10 on Tuesday night. He had interrupted her planning how to break out of Sahlgrenska Hospital. She had measured the window and discovered that her head would fit through it, and that she would not have much problem squeezing the rest of her body through. It was 3 stories to the ground, but a combination of torn sheets and a 10-foot extension cord from a floor lamp would solve that problem. She had plotted her escape step by step. The problem was what she would wear. She had underwear, a hospital nightshirt, and a pair of plastic flip-flops that she had managed to borrow. She had 200 kroner in cash from Annika Giannini to pay for sweets from the hospital snack shop. That should be enough for a cheap pair of jeans and a T-shirt at the Salvation Army store, if she could find one in Göteborg. She would have to spend what was left of the money on a call to Plague, a fellow member of Hacker Republic. Then everything would work out. She planned on landing in Gibraltar a few days after she escaped, and from there she would create a new identity somewhere in the world. Jonasson sat in the guest chair. She sat on the edge of her bed.
"Hello, Lisbeth. I'm sorry I haven't come to see you the past few days, but I've been up to my ears in the ER, and I've also been made a mentor for a couple of interns."
She hadn't expected Jonasson to make special visits to see her. He picked up her chart and studied her temperature graph and the record of medications. Her temperature was steady, between 98.6 and 98.9 degrees, and for the past week she had not taken any headache tablets.
"Dr. Endrin is your doctor. Do you get along with her?"
"She's all right,"
Salander said, without enthusiasm.
"Is it okay if I do an examination?"
She nodded. He took a penlight out of his pocket and bent over to shine it into her eyes, to see how her pupils contracted and expanded. He asked her to open her mouth and examined her throat. Then he placed his hands gently around her neck and moved her head back and forth and to the sides a few times.
"You don't have any pain in your neck?"
he said. She shook her head. "How's the headache?"
"I feel it now and then, but it passes."
"The healing process is ongoing. the headache will eventually disappear altogether. Her hair was still so short that he hardly needed to push aside the tufts to feel the scar above her ear. It was healing, but there was a small scab. "You've been scratching the wound. You shouldn't do that." She nodded. He took her left elbow and raised the arm. "Can you lift it by yourself?" She lifted her arm. "Do you have any pain or discomfort in the shoulder?" She shook her head. "Does it feel tight?"
"A little."
"I think you have to do a bit more physical therapy on your shoulder muscles."
"It's hard when you're locked up like this."
He smiled at her. "That won't last. Are you doing the exercises the therapist recommended?" She nodded. He pressed his stethoscope against his wrist for a moment to warm it. Then he sat on the edge of the bed and untied the strings of her nightshirt, listened to her heart, and took her pulse. He asked her to lean forward and placed the stethoscope on her back to listen to her lungs. "Cough." She coughed. "Okay, you can do up your nightshirt and get into bed. From a medical standpoint, you're just about recovered.